Let's go ahead and get started on another week of our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word by opening to Proverbs chapter 16, where we will resume our look at these Proverbs with verse number 6. I hope you have like a little notepad nearby where you can jot down any of the references of Proverbs that intrigue you or look like they might be useful to you or perhaps to someone else. Because that's what this book is for. It's supposed to be a resource tool for memorization to prep on how to think through life's situations. Proverbs 16:6. By steadfast love and faithfulness, iniquity is atoned for, and by the fear of he who is, one turns away from evil. So having a healthy respect for God keeps you on the straight and narrow, keeps you resisting the devil so he'll flee from you, keeps you committed to staying with the one who loved you and gave himself up for you, because it's by his love, by his faithfulness, that sin has been atoned for. And so this is a great proverb. Verse number 7, when a man's ways please he who is, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. So the idea is that if you are behaving yourself according to God's standards, God's morality, even some of the people that don't particularly like you may still get along with you, because presumably they would understand that you can be trusted to keep your word and live according to a set of principled standards. Verse number 8, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. So doing the right thing, being in right relationship, is much more valuable than the stuff we can have, the things that we can own, the prosperity we might be able to gain by illicit means. So the encouragement here is do the right thing, even if you end up living modestly or even with very little, because it's still worthwhile in the long run. Verse 9, the heart of a man plans his ways, but he who is establishes his steps. So the heart is the place in Hebrew mind where choices are made. So we start making choices, but the thing that's going to prosper our ways is if we let God pick the direction, the pace, however you want to look at it, the way that we live our lives. Verse number 10, an oracle is on the lips of a king. His mouth does not sin in judgment. Now, this oracle here that we're talking about is divine information. And so we're talking about prophetic insight. Solomon is the one that was writing this, and he has some sort of connection to inspiration. And so his proverb here is that when God speaks through the king, then he's not going to err in his judgment. Now, the problem, of course, arises later in Solomon's life when he does not speak on behalf of God, and he starts doing things that are inappropriate, and then this proverb kind of goes out the window. And the same is true for anyone in leadership. The moment that they quit doing things by God's standard, they no longer represent God. Verse number 11, a just balance and scales are he who is. All the weights in the bag are his work. Back at this time, they weighed as part of their commerce. They weighed precious metals for the purchase, or they weighed items to be sold so that they could know how much needed to be paid for that amount of material. And unfortunately, unscrupulous merchants would keep two different bags of weights. One that they would use to buy that would be in their favor, and one that they would use to sell in their favor. And that's not appropriate. That's cheating. It's not being even-handed across the board. It's one of the reasons why we in our modern time have government agencies whose purpose, sole purpose, is to maintain the exact same standards and measures across the board. And we as believers have got to be fair in our treatment of everyone. We don't apply different standards regarding the same situation to different people just because we might like some and don't get along with others. So be equitable in your treatment of everyone. Verse number 12. It is an abomination, something that makes you sick. It is an abomination to kings to do evil, for the throne is established by righteousness. This is a reminder again that Israel was supposed to be a theocracy, ruled by God himself. Solomon and all of Solomon's sons and grandsons and descendants right down the line that came to the throne of Israel were supposed to be representing God's way of governing. And when any leader that is supposed to be discharging things by God's standard quits doing that, that is a sickening situation. Verse number 13. Righteous lips are the delight of a king, and he loves him who speaks what is right. So if kings are supposed to represent God, then they are supposed to be made happy when they see people acting and doing and speaking in accordance with God's work. I always think about the book of Romans, chapter number 13, which says that the point of government officials is to punish those who do wrong and to reward those who do right. And that's the standard that God had intended. Verse 14, a king's wrath is a messenger of death, and a wise man will appease it. So kings carried the right to capital punishment. And because of that, this proverb advises if you're in a capital case, then you need to be talking to the king in a wise fashion to try to avoid that fate. Now, hopefully, you haven't done the crime so that you won't have to pay that ultimate penalty. Verse 15. In the light of a king's face there is life, and his favor is like the clouds that bring the spring rain. Now that's a desirable thing. You want the clouds to bring the spring rain. And so the king looking upon you in favor during a trial, that's a good thing. If he can grant life rather than death, you want him to shine upon you as the sun or rain upon you to bring life back into you. Verse number 16. How much better to get wisdom than gold, to get understanding than to be chosen, is to be chosen rather than silver. Again, the standard of God's kingdom, the economy of God, is driven by people rather than things like silver and gold. So we as believers need to put our value in people as well. Verse 17, the highway of the upright turns aside from evil. Whoever guards his way preserves his life. So we walk, we live, we travel. That's the imagery that we see here. Away from evil. Think about the model prayer. Lead us not into temptation. Deliver us from evil. You know, let us take the bypass around evil. That's what this proverb is talking about. And we need to be attentive to that. We need to guard our path to stay away from death and stay with life. Verse 18, we often hear a collapsed part of this because Hebrew poetry often has a parallelism to it, where you'll say the exact same thing twice, just use different wordings. And so we have a saying that's joined the beginning and the end of this proverb. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty heart before a fall. So we say pride comes before a fall. Well, pride, of course, is not that good sense of pride where we've done a good job and we're happy with ourselves. This is arrogance. This is the belief that we need nothing else. We are the premier being, and we need to have our way all the time. Well, when we adopt that sort of attitude, we're just looking for a place for that to fall apart, and judgment will come. Verse number 19. It is better to be of a lowly spirit with the poor than to divide the spoil with the proud. So the idea here is it's better to be in the right with God and to have very little, you know, hanging out with all the poor people, than to do the wrong things, such as stealing from other people, embezzling from other people, forcing other people to give you their stuff with a gang. That's going to bring judgment. So you don't want the wealth in a situation like that because it brings judgment with it. Verse number 20. Whoever gives thought to the word will discover good, and blessed is he who trusts in he who is. So the word that we've got in mind here is the word of God. I think the written word of God, even in mind. By the time of Solomon, we've got all of Moses' books that are regularly available to the religious Jewish people, as well as the writings that we know of as Joshua and Judges and Ruth and the Samuels, things like that. So they're supposed to be the source of good things that we can discover so that we can be blessed by trusting the God that's described in those pages. Verse 21, the wise of heart is called discerning, and sweetness of speech increases persuasiveness. So wisdom is proper thinking from God's standard. Discernment is, you know, understanding the difference between right and wrong and good choices and bad choices. And this sweetness of speech is the idea of trying to convince other people to follow that route, to do the right thing. It's part of our function as believers to encourage one another to love and good deeds. Verse 22. Good sense is a fountain of life to him who has it, but the instruction of fools is folly. The contrast here between wisdom and folly is wisdom is from God. It belongs to godly people, and foolishness is the opposite of that. It's thinking that is self-centered, world-centered, and you don't want to be involved in it because it brings destruction, whereas wisdom of God brings life. Verse 23, the heart of the wise man makes his speech judicious or fair and adds persuasiveness to his lips. So if we've been programmed in our hearts, the place where we make our life choices, if we've been programmed by God's wisdom, then we're going to speak out of that wisdom. And that's going to be more persuasive to people who are also seeking God things. Verse 24, gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. The Israelis loved their honeycomb. It was an energy source. It was a sweet taste, and they looked at it as being healthful. And I love chewing on honeycomb as a kid, and even do it from time to time as an adult. It does give you this burst of energy, and it's just sweet to the taste. So gracious words are like that. words that come from God should bring that energy and sweetness to other people's lives. Verse 25, there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. Now, this seems to be a fairly widely quoted proverb, and it's again that idea of perception. Sometimes people think what they want to do is a good thing for them. But if you evaluate it by God's standards, you find out that it is nothing but trouble in the end. I think about Jesus talking about broad is the way that leads to destruction. See, the big superhighway of life that's easy to go down will lead you right straight to hell. And the path that is more compressed, that you have to have more attentiveness to it to stay on it, that's the one that leads to life. And so here's a proverb that kind of warns about that difference. Verse number 26, a worker's appetite works for him, his mouth urges him on. Now, this is one of the laziness proverbs. The idea that even if you don't feel like going out and working, the fact that you'd like to eat something today, the fact that you'd like to have a place to live and a place to sleep and some warm clothes, that's going to drive you to go and find a job and do the work, which is, I think, one of the reasons that our programs should always, our unemployment programs should always include some provision that urges people to get back to work. We definitely should help people when, through no fault of their own, they fall on hard times, they lose their job, and maybe we can help them with retraining and things like that. But we need to keep the bite in place of, if you want to eat, you better work. Verse number 27. A worthless man plots evil, and his speech is like a scorching fire. So bad people do bad things, and they talk about doing bad things. That should be one of the clues that you're dealing with somebody dangerous. Verse 28, a dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. These are frustrating individuals that are always trying to stir the pot. They're always trying to drive a wedge between other people. And these people need to be stopped from that type of behavior. And definitely, if this sort of stuff comes up in the church, someone of this mindset needs to be disciplined. Verse 29. A man of violence entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good. Keep in mind that these proverbs are targeted to younger people who might actually be talked into joining gangs. Solomon actually dealt with that earlier in the book. That would go out and use their force to take other people's stuff. That is not appropriate. And so this proverb reminds the reader, don't let somebody talk you into doing things that are wrong. Verse 30, whoever winks his eyes plans dishonest things. He who purses his lips brings evil to pass. These are talking about bodily signals between conspirators to take advantage of other people. And so, again, you don't want to fall in with that type of crowd. Verse 31, and I've appreciated this more in my current age. Gray hair is a crown of glory. It is gained in a righteous life. So the longer you live, the more likely it is that your hair is going to pop off white and gray. And this proverb just reminds a person, hey, that's a sign that you've lived a good long time in God's earth and hopefully appropriately lived a righteous life. verse 32. Whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. So we think about warriors that can go out there and fight in the battle, maybe be involved in the taking of a city. They're very strong. But an even stronger person is the moral individual who keeps his temper in check. I always am reminded when I come across Proverbs like this of James in the New Testament, where he says that believers should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because that shows self-discipline. And we as Christians need to have self-discipline. Proverbs 16:31 is something that you should take in consideration when we come across stories in the New Testament in particular about the divine lot, such as the way that the Jewish priesthood selected who would go in and offer the incense during prayer time in the temple. That's how Zacharias, the father of John the Immerser, was selected. Or in Acts chapter 1, when the 11 apostles decided they needed to replace Judas from a pool of people that had been disciples of Jesus the whole time of his ministry. And they did it by praying and then casting the divine lot. Well, that's what's being described here in Proverbs 16:33. The lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from he who is. So this is not referencing gambling. This is referencing a decision, a prayerful decision that is handed over to God, because you can't be certain, with all other things being equal, which choice to go with. For example, when you got a whole big old pool of priests and all of them are qualified to go in and offer the prayer offering, the prayer incense, then just turn it over to God. Pray, cast the lot, see who he sends in. You've got two guys in the book of Acts chapter 1, both of them good, godly men, equally qualified to serve as the replacement for the betrayer Judas Iscariot. You can't make up your mind which one should be put in this position, so you pray and leave the decision up to God. I've actually used this myself in church work, where we couldn't figure out, you know, all things were equal between two choices, so we prayed about it, we cast the lot, we actually flipped a coin, and we let God choose, and I think it's perfectly appropriate. Proverbs 17. Better is a dry morsel with quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. And that's pretty self-explanatory. We all would prefer to live a quiet life, even if we don't have lots and lots of stuff, rather than being involved in great chaos that might come with lots of other benefits. Verse number 2. A servant who deals wisely will rule over a son who acts shamefully and will share the inheritance as one of the brothers. Bit of an observation here that in a household where the father sees his son being an absolute pain, but his servant acting in great moral certitude, then he's going to prefer putting his servant in charge of stuff, because you always go with the one that's trustworthy. That's more important than blood. When we think about salvation, it is not genetics that we look to decide who is saved. It is faithfulness, commitment, and relationship with God. Verse number 3, the crucible is for silver and the furnace is for gold, and he who is tests hearts. And this idea of testing comes up a lot in the phrases of the New Testament. They heated up silver ore and gold ore to very high temperatures in order to separate the pure gold, the pure silver from the dross. In the same way, God lets us go through tough times, through the heat of difficulties, in order to separate our pure faith from all the dross of life that might be in us. Verse number 4, an evildoer listens to wicked lips, and a liar gives ear to a mischievous tongue. So people will go with what they want to hear sometimes because their hearts are not right. And the proverb here is basically encouraging us, don't do that. Don't be the evildoer. Don't be the liar that pays attention to the lies and the evil things. Verse 5, whoever mocks the poor insults his maker. He who is glad at calamity will not go unpunished. Got to be very cautious. When we see other people, and maybe we're not getting along with them, and bad things happen to them, and we rejoice over that, that's pretty borderline danger that we've got to be careful about. And especially, we should not be mocking those who are less fortunate than ourselves, because they are made in the image of God. And we really ought to be praying for them, even if their poverty is on them because of their sin. We ought to be praying that they can come out of that sin. And then finally, verse 6, great place to end. Grandchildren are the crown of the aged, and the glory of children is their fathers. So my granddaughter just turned 1 a couple of days ago, and that's very nice to be a grandfather. And enjoy all the time that I get to spend with her. And of course, I hope children appreciate their parents because they also are gifts from God into their lives. Have a great day. We'll talk more tomorrow.